The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Oh, yeah!
On 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
What is this?
We're talking Notre Dame football, the NFL, the Cubs, and more.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
The Leprechaun Lunch.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
With Sean Stiers.
All you do is dribble.
I have to dribble. If I give it to you, you just shoot.
And Evan Sharpley.
You're a chucker. You chuck.
If it's happening in sports.
Bumble!
We're talking about it.
Flag on the play.
Now your hosts. Woo! Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback. Evan Sharpley.
Well, it's Friday. Friday the 13th. Apparently there's a full moon that's going to occur some point today. I figure probably once the sun sets and then the moon comes out. We're live from Five Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart, and we have a Notre Dame home football weekend. I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, and standing in for Sean Stiers today is Notre Dame insider at the South Bend Tribune, Tyler James. Damn. Tyler, what's going on?
Not much, just football.
Could you give us a little rundown on all of the goings-on at the South Bend Tribune? What can people be reading? What should they be paying attention to?
Yeah, we got all kinds of stuff going on today. In today's newspaper, we had our Indy Insider tab section. So all kinds of stories about Notre Dame and even New Mexico's coverage as well with some rosters. And then we will, in tomorrow's newspaper, we'll have our pregame wrap. So a couple more stories, depth charts, and all the good stuff you need to know heading into the New Mexico game. So we got all kinds of stuff going on. We're even selling some premium subscriptions for 30% off at IndyInsider.com. So if you're interested in that, go check that out. But yeah, it's a busy time. It's a fun time of year. And I'm glad this week is a normal schedule. It was a very weird start to the year with the first game on a Monday and then the bye week, but now we're back in the groove. And
do you feel rested after the bye week?
I feel like I got better between week one and week two, and that's all that really matters.
That's
right?
Usually where the most growth occurs, right, on the team is what we've heard.
Well, that is a weird question.
Kickoff is 2:30 tomorrow, and coverage on WSBT starts at 10 tomorrow. We've got a bunch of different things dialed up. Game day sports beat. We'll have the pregame show as well, live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites. And Vince D'Addario and Tim Growl will be doing that show this year. There'll be Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue, as always. And Notre Dame clocks in here, I believe, the last I checked, as a 35.5-point favorite. And now that betting is legal here in Indiana, Tyler, are you going to take the over or the under on that 35.5?
I think Notre Dame can cover that spread. I think that they're going to score lots of points, and I don't know that New Mexico is going to be able to do much of that at all. So certainly crazier things have happened. Notre Dame has had times where some teams that you wouldn't expect to compete with Notre Dame have kept it closer than you'd expect. But other times, I think I counted like 8 games in the last 3 seasons that Notre Dame had won by 28 points or more. So they certainly have handled teams before. I know people are a little bit worried by the way the Louisville game went and the way the Ball State game went last year. That why can't Notre Dame blow out these teams? Well, they have blown out teams, just not every single time. And then people tend to remember the ones where they weren't successful in. But I think this weekend, especially with the way they played against Louisville, Notre Dame will want to really establish itself and say, okay, the first game was not what we wanted, and we're going to come out here, set the tone, and show that we're a better team than what we displayed, and try to give people confidence going into the Georgia game, though I don't know that there's much they could even do on Saturday to do that.
Well, but before we get a little more into this week's game, let's rewind back to the Louisville game.
Sure.
And just get a few of your thoughts. I know we've had a couple of weeks to kind of rehash most of the things that have happened, but you know, with the fallout of the way the game went, a fast start by Louisville. They played very well early on, scored a couple of touchdowns, really went down the field at will. And then Notre Dame's defense adjusted, and for the vast majority of the game then, played very strong, got off the field on third downs. And then on the offensive side, I guess you could say inconsistent was probably the best way to describe it. You know, some bright spots there at the running back position with a couple of guys stepping up. What was your general takeaways from this Louisville game and how Notre Dame played as they moved into that bye week? And maybe what were a couple of things that you believe that Brian Kelly and his team addressed over the bye week?
Yeah, I think starting defensively, it was a little bit surprising how they looked a little bit out of sorts at the beginning. although I think we've talked plenty about how the linebacker situation is not a stable one right now, and so to see Louisville take advantage of that isn't terribly surprising. I think they definitely put Notre Dame on their heels a bit, and Notre Dame was able to react, and certainly that's what you want to see from your players. That's what you want to see from your coaching staff, that they can make those adjustments on the fly, even when they were maybe feeling it a little bit at the start of that game, like, oh no, here we go. But they were able to rebound. I thought most of the guys recovered and played well. I thought Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah played pretty well at the Rover spot. Drew White and Asmar Bilal had some ups and downs at inside linebacker. But you saw some things. Kyle Hamilton looked pretty good in his first game. Being the five-star safety, kind of lived up to that. And then the defensive line was hit or miss. I think towards the end of the game they were generating some pretty good pressure, but before that they had some offsides penalties, and you really can't do that. They really shortened the third down situations for Louisville. When they had them in bad spots, and they would go offsides, and so Notre Dame needs to fix that situation, which was a little bit surprising coming from guys like Khalid Kareem and Julian Acquard that you're planning to rely on as seniors. And then offensively, I thought that the game plan was I don't know if the game plan was weird. Ian Book made weird decisions. I'm not quite sure where to place the blame necessarily, but they were able to, when they wanted to run the ball, they were able to run the ball pretty consistently, except there were a few short yarded situations where they weren't able to convert, and maybe Ian Book needed to check out of that because they were facing bad numbers in the box or something. But I think that their passing game was bizarre. They didn't throw any passes deeper than 20 yards, if you aren't counting the throwaway passes that Ian Book had. He didn't throw any.
I think we should count one of those, though.
He did connect. That was definitely on target when he hit the poor Louisville dancer on the sideline, who at least went viral for her troubles. And then they didn't throw any screen passes as well, which I know the screen pass game, it's a pretty consistent part of Notre Dame's offense. A lot of the RPOs that they run, there are screen outlets on those plays. And for whatever reason, Ian Book never chose to take any of those. I don't know if that was his decision or a coach's decision or the way the defense was lining up that dictated that. But to see Chris Fink only have one catch is certainly surprising. I would imagine they try to get him more involved this weekend against New Mexico. And it was just not a great performance for Ian Book, especially coming off of last season. And there's always the doubt of, well, can a quarterback improve under Brad Kelly? And
last time you were here with me, we talked about this.
Yeah, we talked about that. And Ian and Tommy Reese, I talked to both of them during the offseason about what they were doing, and they weren't worried about that. They felt confident that Ian was making improvements and was going to be better for everything that he went through last season. And he didn't really prove many of his supporters and help them out last week. And so I imagine he is a little bit disappointed with that, wants to come out this week against New Mexico and show that last week the last game was a little bit of an aberration, and he was just throwing some things that he wasn't necessarily prepared for, and maybe had some first game jitters. I think he was leaving the pocket earlier than he needed to and was feeling pressure more than he actually was receiving pressure. And so there's lots of things to improve on. There was certainly some bright spots, especially from young guys. Jameer Smith scoring his first touchdowns. Tommy Tremble catching a touchdown pass for his first career catch. So you like that, and obviously Notre Dame's going to want to integrate those guys in the offense more and more moving forward as they work to get some of their guys back from injury. Certainly losing Jafar Armstrong for an extended period of time now is a blow to Notre Dame's offense, but Tony Jones had some bright spots against Louisville, and we'll see how he does as kind of the lead back moving forward.
This is usually an Eric Hansen question to Brian Kelly, but update us real quick on the status of some of the players that were injured. What's their timeline look like? There's been conversation on Cole Kmet, you know, coming back. Michael Young on the offensive side. Jafar Armstrong, you know, it's looking like it's going to be a little bit longer term. Update us on kind of how that looks here.
Yeah, so Cole Kmet, from everything I've heard, it seems like he can play this weekend, but Notre Dame hasn't necessarily addressed or made it. I don't even know if they've made the decision of whether or not he will play. I don't believe he had any sort of setbacks this week. He's been practicing. He was cleared to go physically, and as long as there weren't any setbacks, he would be in a position to play this weekend against New Mexico. And we'll see if that happens or not. Obviously, they want him for the Georgia game. That's when they're going to need him. But you have to decide, well, is it worth risking putting him out there, or do you feel like you need to have him out there to get maybe some of the rust off because he hasn't had a chance to play this season?
Beyond that, Jameer Smith had a sprained toe, Brian Kelly said, that he suffered in the scrimmage last Saturday. But he wasn't exactly clear and obvious of whether or not that would prevent Jameer Smith from playing. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Certainly with Notre Dame's running back situation, you would like to be able to rely on Jameer Smith behind Tony Jones. But I expect even if Jameer Smith is healthy that they're going to have to get a lot of action from Sebo Flemister and Kyron Williams because they need to make sure those guys are up and running because the depth is certainly taking a hit. They moved Avery Davis, who's played all over the place at Notre Dame already, came in as a quarterback. Tried a little receiver and some running back last year and then was playing defensive back this year, and they've moved him back to running back now to help out that depth. And then Michael Young, Brian Kelly said, was about a week behind where Cole Kmet is, which maybe I'm curious to see if that's actually the case because I think Michael Young's injury actually happened like about 2 weeks after Cole Kmet, so it would make more sense if he was 2 weeks behind. But we haven't heard any news. I think the process is they take an x-ray 1 week and then the next week they take a CAT scan. This is what we were told about Cole Kmet's collarbone surgery, just to make sure everything is healed in there with the collarbone. And so he seems to be a couple weeks away, would be my guess. So I don't know that we're going to see Michael Young for the Georgia game, but I would anticipate we'll see Cole Kmet, and we'll see what Jameer Smith's status is. And then, obviously, Jafar Armstrong, like we mentioned, is out. He tore his ab muscle, basically, the one that runs. I did some research. Runs from your pelvis to your rib cage, so it sounds very painful. It sounds very painful. And so he had to have surgery on that. I think could be out several weeks. I think 5 to 8 weeks was something that we had heard, although Brian Kelly did not necessarily go into details for sure how long it would take Jafar to get back. But certainly unfortunate for him because you thought he would be due for a big season. He's probably the most explosive running back that Notre Dame has. And he had some injury issues last year, too. So you hate to see a guy trying to really establish himself and have to struggle with these weird injuries. I'd never heard of the injury that he had suffered, and it was very strange after the game. We were asking Brian Kelly about what the injury was, and he said something about it being midline, and we're all looking at each other like, what the heck is midline? So it turns out he ended up having a torn ab, so that sounds really painful and certainly...
Just rub a little dirt on it.
yeah. So Notre Dame is not in a great spot health-wise, but I think they're progressing, and certainly you want to get at least Cole Kmet back for the Georgia game because you're going to need all hands on deck for that one.
So, Tyler, having been there during spring ball and watching this team progress and grow, kind of knowing and understanding the strengths and weaknesses of that team, you saw them then in fall camp where they are. Now, having watched them during week one and then also given the status of you know, several of the guys that are injured, where are your expectations right now, and maybe how have they changed even from back in the spring?
I don't know that they've changed a lot. Going into the season, I had projected 10 wins, and one of those losses being against Georgia. Now, the other loss I had predicted was against Michigan, so certainly you feel a little bit better about Notre Dame's chances against Michigan the way that Michigan has started the season, but there are some games on the schedule like Virginia that I think
Virginia's a scary one.
It's going to be a tough game, so I still feel pretty good about that prediction with 10 wins, but certainly need to see more from Notre Dame to feel really confident about it. I just think that, especially the Georgia game, it just seems like you thought maybe going into the season, okay, maybe Notre Dame can give them a game and hang with them and make it interesting. But if they play like they played against Louisville, it's not going to be very interesting and not going to be very pretty. So I'm very curious to see how that's going to play out. I know fans are too, because we get more questions about how Notre Dame's going to play in the Georgia game than we get about Louisville and New Mexico in the last few weeks. So that is going to be fascinating. But I don't know. It's tough because we've only seen one game, and you don't want to overreact, but there's certainly questions that we had that weren't necessarily answered in a positive fashion, and the Louisville game wasn't Notre Dame's best effort. So was that an aberration? Is that a sign of things to come for this season? I think we'll just have to wait and find out.
Do you feel like Irish fans and then also those of us in the media will learn anything this week that may lend to added confidence going into Athens?
I don't know that there's anything that can really change that besides no more injuries to make sure everyone's healthy. I think even if Notre Dame blows out New Mexico and everyone plays amazing, I don't know that you're going to say, okay, now Notre Dame can play Georgia. There's just the the difference between New Mexico and on the road at Georgia is it's almost like a different sport. So I don't know that we're going to learn a lot. I think we can learn about Notre Dame and the progression, and if the things that we saw in the Louisville game are long-lasting and lingering, or if they were things that Notre Dame has maybe adjusted and made the correct moves with. But it's tough. I think it's going to be really difficult to see anything this Saturday that makes you feel different about next Saturday.
You're listening to the Leprechaun Lunch live from Five Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, Indiana. I've been sharply joined with Tyler James today as Sean Stiers is out until next week. And Notre Dame kicks off against New Mexico tomorrow, 2:30 p.m. They're a 35.5-point favorite. The game day show tomorrow is going to be live from the Ivy Court Inn and Suites. We've got a pretty good show set up. We've got Tim Grunhard, former Fighting Irish and NFL center Trevor Robinson. Of course, free Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue. And apparently there's some samplings from Journeyman Distillery and the Studebaker Brewing Company.
Well, all right.
So Tyler may be swinging on through there before the game gets going.
Do you think they'd be fine with me showing up in the press box with some Journeyman Distillery?
Well, I'm sure you'd be a fan favorite up there. And that actually leads me to a what to watch for this game. So I'm kind of posing for you offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, and then the follow-up question, which I'm glad that we talked about Journeyman Distillery, is what type of spread will be in the press box tomorrow? We'll lead with that one, then we'll go offense and defense.
Well, I think I've heard some rumblings that it might be an improved spread in the press box, but I'll believe it when I see it.
You're not going to jump to conclusions?
No. The typical offerings are hot dogs and chili, and then some post-game Papa John's pizza. So it's not the healthiest offerings there, but I think there's probably more unhealthy people in the press box than there are healthy.
It's a tough lifestyle up there for those on press row.
Yeah, I mean, we can't complain too much. We're watching football and making money while we do it and being fed food. So even if when it's not great, we still there could be worse situations. But we'll see. We'll see what Notre Dame offers us. Certainly we're grateful for to be able to do what we do. In terms of players to watch, I want to see what Ian Book does. I think even though he's probably not going to face the same kind of pressure that Louisville was able to create at sometimes, and at least throw the different kind of looks that maybe confused him. I just want to see how he responds to that game. Does he take deep shots? Does he look more comfortable? Because he just didn't look real comfortable against Louisville, and so you really need to see that. I think that's one thing. If you don't see that against New Mexico, then you have to feel even worse about the Georgia game. if Ian Book's not comfortable against New Mexico, then Lord knows what's going to happen the following week. But I think that's one thing to watch. I want to see what the running game does. I'm curious to see if they get Kyron Williams more involved as a freshman running back. He only had one snap against Louisville. He came in, they threw a swing pass to him, and he dropped it. And they didn't let him back in the game. Didn't let him back in the game on the offensive side. So he's going to be the kick returner as well with Javar Armstrong out. So I think that he'll have some opportunities. I like him as a player. It's just a matter of if he's ready to handle a significant role as a freshman here. He was an early enrollee, so certainly has an advantage when it comes to that. Defensively, I want to see a better pass rush. Julian Aquara and Khalid Kareem should dominate against New Mexico. Julian Aquara told me this summer that he wanted to reach 18.5 sacks. So he didn't get off to the best start against Louisville.
Is this a team that's possible against? I know with their style of offense, it may not lend to a number of quarterback pressures or sacks.
Right, yeah. It's tough to say. I think that was part of the Louisville thing. Louisville was getting rid of the ball quick and then running the ball a lot, so they weren't going to sit back there and let Notre Dame's defensive ends attack them. We'll see. New Mexico is going to play a number of different quarterbacks, so it's hard to know for sure what exactly Notre Dame's going to see against New Mexico. But I think they just have to be more disruptive and find a ways to get there. I think because Julian Aquara is good enough that even if you're trying to get rid of the ball quick, he can be there already and at least impact some more throws than he did the week before, against Louisville on Monday for Labor Day. And then at the linebacker level, it's just hopefully you see more or less mistakes and guys in the right spots and maybe a little bit more comfortable. Do we see more guys at the linebacker position? I don't really know. I think it's going to be a fluid situation there. I don't know that we're going to see Asmar and Bilal and Drew White as the only two inside linebackers to play in any game this season. There's going to be a number of guys in there. whether it's Shane Simon, Jordan J. Marquise, DeJack Lamb play more outside last or against Louisville. He was playing primarily in the dime package and being a little bit of a even rushing a lot. They were lining up essentially along the line of scrimmage. And so can all those guys expand their roles? Can they prove themselves to be capable? Because I think no matter who the opponent, the linebacker group needs to get a lot of reps and show themselves, even if it's against a lesser opponent, because they just don't have a lot of experience there. So those are the big things that I'm sort of watching. I'm curious, I've talked a lot about Ian Book. What did you think of how he played against Louisville, and what do you think he needs to do against New Mexico to maybe lessen some of those concerns?
Well, I thought early on in the game there were some pressures that caused him to eject.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, I think that kind of left a stamp in his mind,
right,
that was his clock the rest of the game. So for the remaining three quarters, you saw an Ian Book who really probably went through, you know, read one, maybe two, and then it was time to get out of the pocket. And there were opportunities for him where if it was a subtle move or really just to stay planted. And, you know, of course, it's not fair to make a comparison maybe to a guy like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers who've been playing for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at their pocket movement, there's pressure around you that's picked up, but then there's small movements in the pocket, or sometimes it looks like they're not even moving,
mm-hmm,
but they're just kind of flowing with where that pocket dictates. So, you know, I thought that there was a missed pickup by a running back at one point.
Right.
So sometimes those things, if you don't have full confidence in some new faces who are there in those situations, you may eject a little bit early. But he's got to trust his teammates around him, because there were a number of situations where it was picked up. And, you know, from your peripheral as a quarterback, you know, you're trying to keep your eyes downfield. So you don't have a great, you know, you don't have a specific view of necessarily who is where. Even sometimes free blitzers, you know, and fans are watching the game, they're like, how does the quarterback not see the guy that's unblocked coming right at him?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it'd be the same as, how do you miss then a guy who's downfield, you know, uncovered?
Right.
Same type of thing is, depending on where your gaze or your view is, you can miss things all the time. So, you know, for him, it's just going to be then trust is when he sees, maybe not specifically, or feels a collision that's picked up by a tight end or picked up by a running back, to still stick to his progression, get through that full scope of, okay, whatever it is, if it's coverage-based read, because sometimes if it's a coverage-based read, that may bring him to the backside, and then his read is, you know, come back in post.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's not a coverage read, if it's based on pressure, or you just have a straight progression read. So a coverage read is going to be, you know, based on whatever that coverage is. If it's cover two, or if it's cover three, if it's man, your read then is based on that coverage.
Right.
A true progression read is then, it's just one, two, three, four, regardless of what the coverage or the mm-hmm blitz scheme is. But you've got to be able to go through the full scope of that before you eject out, if there's no pressure, right?
Right.
And I think that was the most concerning thing, was seeing him leave earlier than was really necessarily needed. I mean, he still rushed for 82 yards and
right
a touchdown. Those are positive things. And if you look at his stat line too, 14 to 23, you know, around 200 yards, no interceptions and a touchdown. They're not poor numbers,
right,
but the expectation really, and I think what's falling on his shoulders, is that it's going to be around 300 yards a game, you know, par for what he's done so far, around 70% completion percentage and three touchdowns.
Yeah.
So I think that because the bar was set so high last year, and granted the final five or six games of the season, some of those numbers went down. He was still around 60%, but if you look at the full picture of his, you know, his time as the starting quarterback so far at Notre Dame, is he's going to be 65 to 70% completion, and he's going to be around 300 yards. So, and really, I think for this team, and your prediction was 10 wins, I'm in the same boat, around 9 or 10. I think for them to be there, he's going to have to play at that level, especially against teams like Georgia and Michigan and Virginia and USC and Stanford, if they want to have, you know, the opportunity to win. So for me at this point now, and Brian Kelly and Ian Book addressed this post-game, was he's got to be a little more patient in the pocket to see everything that's going on. They have a talented group of receivers, you know, even though a few of them haven't played a whole lot. You know, Chris Fink has a lot of experience. You have Chase Claypool, who, you know, he made a couple of spectacular plays and I think can be a true game changer at the wide receiver position. They have some young guys, and once they get Michael Young back too, because he was really my X factor at the receiver position going into the season, where I thought he could have a pretty big year.
Yeah, he looked good in camp.
Ian Book at his best doesn't necessarily hone in on one guy, right? When he was locked in last year, he'd go through the full progression read, and it was whoever was open. So right. I think for him, you know, now working into week two, hopefully, you know, unlike the NFL where you have a few preseason games and whether or not those games mean anything or people are trying, right? This was kind of like a preseason game and looked kind of like a preseason game for Ian Book, where there were some mistakes. You know, fortunately for Notre Dame, they still won, so you can go and watch that film and be pretty critical and say, dude, what were you doing here? You know, what are you actually seeing, and why are you now ejecting out of the pocket? So now into week two, and then moving forward for this football team, I want to see an Ian Book that still is timely with his runs, because it's part of his game. He has that athleticism. But then, you know, being able to distribute the football to his receiving crew, and then also to the tight end position too. I thought, you know, a bright spot on the offense in week one was Tommy Tremble, you know, and what they were able to do finally seeing, you know, he saw two high safeties and he was taking the middle of the field and was able to deliver on a nice touchdown. So that's an important part of it. You know, for me, I think if we're looking at things or areas to watch now here in New Mexico and then moving forward, you touched on the quarterback position. For me, it's going to be the running backs. I'm not really worried about Ian Book.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think that if there's two or three performances in a row, then maybe. But
yeah.
I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think in that quarterback room, there's good dialogue and good discussion with a guy who's been there in Tommy Reese, and then also with Ian Book now, who's, you know, this was the first time he was the starting quarterback to start the season. It's a little bit of a different feel. He's the guy, and there's really, I mean, it's clear he's the guy. So, you know, now life without Jafar Armstrong, what's that going to look like? Who are going to be the other players that are going to be involved? How does this offense move and evolve around that? Because you have to have a solid running game. They have a veteran offensive line, sans a new starter at the center position, mm-hmm. that I think will continue to grow. Are they going to be able to pick up first downs on third and two when everyone in the stadium knows that they're going to be running the football?
Right.
So for me, that's the biggest thing here in game two for Irish fans to watch outside of the quarterback position is going to be what goes on at running back. And then defensively, I'll just reiterate what you said. I think it's been the question since the season ended last year and you lose two of the top leading tacklers is, what's this rotation going to look like at linebacker? We may not know for a few games, which is unfortunate and is still a red flag, because you want guys to emerge and say,
right,
you know, I'm putting my foot down. I'm going to be on the field at all times.
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the case. And it doesn't have to be a negative. It doesn't have to be that way, but it certainly does raise some concerns when you've got so many different bodies rotating in and moving through. So I'll be interested to see how that one shakes out. As far as this 35.5 point spread, Tyler, I know you said take the over. I'm going to take the under on that one right there because for whatever reason, and having, you know, been around Notre Dame football for so long, and you are correct, they have been able to trounce a few teams, but that was not when they had a 35-point spread to hit. Over the course, I think since 2012, they'd had three opportunities with 30-point spreads in their 0-3.
All right.
So I'm going to take the under, and I don't know. This type of game kind of has the feel of they'll end up winning by 24, but it may be like a 20-point game going into the late third quarter, and then there'll be a turnover, probably forced by Aloy Gilman.
All right.
And then Notre Dame will put it away. So that's kind of where I am right now. As we bring this first segment to a close real quick, Vince D'Addario on the Game Day Show on WSBT, he'll be there with Tim Growl tomorrow morning. They're doing four prop bets, if we want to call them bets, or four props per
sure.
week. Let's hit those real quick, and then Sean and Reggie on the post-game show will then answer those every week and go through those. So the first one is over under 300 yards passing for Ian Book.
I will go with under. I think he's going to throw a lot of touchdowns, but I'm not sure that the yardage will be up that high. And it's also a question of how long is Ian Book in the game. Is he going into the fourth quarter, or is he getting a rest in the fourth quarter and letting Phil Jurkovec get out there? So I'll under, though. I think it'll be very close.
I'm going to take the under here, too. I think also, you know, something to keep in mind is the New Mexico offense, whether or not they're, you know, are they moving the ball at all? Are they going to be on the field for how long? So I think that's something to play into on ball control teams.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they're going to be able to do that, I think that'll at least play into, you know, time of possession. Okay, number two, 5 total sacks in the game for Notre Dame.
Oh, man, I'll go over. I just think that Notre Dame's defensive line probably isn't too pleased with how they played last week, how they played on Labor Day, and I think they'll just continue to get after the quarterback. And I think New Mexico is going to be down, and so they're going to be throwing a lot to try and catch up.
That's a good point, because I was going to say their style of offense I don't think would lend to it. And last week I got this wrong. I said over last week.
Same, yep.
You're doing it too.
It's not last week.
Well, I guess technically it is last week because of Monday.
Yeah, yeah.
To your point, I thought Louisville had a great game plan, was running the football and getting the ball out quick. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a way to disrupt the pass rush of a talented group. So I'm going to take the under on this one. But if they go over, it is going to be because they're down and they're going to have to throw. Number three, 40 total points for Notre Dame.
Oh, I went over with that. I think I predicted 52 for Notre Dame. So,
yeah. What's the total points on this game?
I do not know what the over-under
for
the
total is. I haven't seen that. I've only seen the spread at 35.
Because my final score prediction is 52-13.
Okay.
In Notre Dame's favor. So I go over on that one, obviously.
I'm going to take the under. I don't know why. I'm just going to do it.
Man, you're being the Debbie Downer today.
Yes, I am. All right, and last one here, 250 yards rushing for Notre Dame.
I'll go over there. I think there's going to be lots of rushing, and certainly when they're ahead, as I expect, they'll be pounding the rock and getting some of those guys like Sebo Flemister and Kyron Williams that I mentioned some more extra reps to get them a little bit more seasoned moving forward. So I'll go over.
I'm taking the over on that one.
There you go. You're positive about something.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more Notre Dame football, a little bit on the recruiting side. We'll get into some Major League Baseball. The NFL now back in full swing, too. If you're in the area, stop by 5-Star Dive Bar downtown Elkhart, where we've got the one-pound wing challenge that is now morphed into the 2-pound wing challenge. And if you happen to complete the 2-pound wing challenge during a commercial break, you'll get a personalized Mr. 45% T-shirt with Tom Noyes' signature on it. I don't know if Tom knows that yet, but that's the case.
So. Well, I see Tom a lot. I can get his signature for him.
I'm sure we can make that happen. Well, you're listening to 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We'll be right back. Well, we're back here at 5-Star Dive Bar in downtown Elkhart. It doesn't look like anybody tried the 2-pound wing challenge over the break. Maybe we can save that for the final one. If anybody wants to give that thing a roll, the wings are fantastic. Did you have the wings last time?
I did not. I did see you scarf them down during the commercial.
Oh, that's right. I just did the 1-pound challenge, though. That was like we were doing it. It was like the beta test on whether it was possible or not, and it certainly was. So,
although you didn't do the fries, right?
Didn't do the fries. No, I passed on the fries. I figured I'd just stick with the chicken wings. But if you're in the area, if you're downtown, stop in. See us at 5-Star Dive Bar. We're here every Friday. Always a lot going on. Great lunch specials, great food, comedy show, live music. You name it, it's going on here. And on Fridays from noon to 1, this is where normally Sean Steyer sits next to me. Today we have Tyler James from the South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame's football insider, along with Eric Hansen. Who else is on your team as well?
We have Carver Carls, who does football and recruiting for us. And then we also have
that was a good segue,
the one and only Tom Noy.
Oh, we do have Tom Noy, too. We can't forget about Tom. Well, real quick, let's go over a little bit of Notre Dame football recruiting. It's important to keep the pipeline continually stocked with new talent, new players. And where does Notre Dame sit currently right now with a number of recruits already committed with the new signing date, the early signing period? I know Notre Dame has taken full advantage of that, at least in the last class, and really being able to wrap up their recruitment by Christmas time,
right?
And knowing who's there. So what's the current class look like right now, Tyler?
Yeah, Notre Dame has 17 commitments, and doesn't seem like that number's going to change anytime soon necessarily. Notre Dame got off to a very good start with the class, and it's just sort of kind of weeding its way through what else they want to add in this class. I think the scholarship numbers are going to be a little bit limited. They're not going to go much beyond 20, I would imagine. So I think that they're being rightfully kind of picky at this point and saying, okay, well, what positions are the most important needs for us, and which guys are worth continuing to pursue. And this is kind of that time of year where teams kind of reset. The recruiting kind of dies during August, but now that home games start coming up, they'll have kids coming into town for games. And this year, because they are so far ahead in that 2020 class, there'll be lots of kids from the 2021 and 2022 class. Notre Dame's not going to just sit around and say, "Oh, we're mostly done with the 2020 class, so we're not going to do any recruiting." They're going to keep bringing in some younger kids, and Notre Dame's got off to a pretty decent start in the 2021 class as well. So they have a number of good players that I like in the class. Jordan Johnson, receiver out of the St. Louis area. Certainly, they've had Drew Pine committed longer than anyone, who's their quarterback commit. He was the first commit in the class. A couple tight ends that I like a lot, Michael Mayer and Kevin Bauman. Jordan Botello is a very interesting defensive end prospect out of Hawaii, Tosh Baker. An offensive tackle I like a lot, very athletic kid, basketball player out of Arizona who's committed. So it's a good-looking group. And can't forget Chris Tyree, who has 4.3 speed. Mm-hmm. And
that's how fast I run.
And is I imagine Lance Taylor would like to – probably wouldn't be upset if he had him in his running back room right now with everything that's going on. But he's going to have to wait till next season to get Chris Tyree on campus. That was sort of his first big recruit when Lance Taylor was hired. He made Chris Tyree a priority. And at least at this point, you can't say anything for sure, but he's verbally committed, and they'll hope to get him signed in December. So the recruiting class is in a good spot. It's interesting, because there's two bye weeks this year, there's two bye weeks, Notre Dame could have went out on the road and started visiting some kids and watching them. You don't get to interact necessarily with the kids, but you get to watch and evaluate kids and kind of make your presence known at their high school games and stuff like that. But Notre Dame chose to spend the first bye week on campus here, focusing on the current team. And we'll use the next bye week to get out on the road. And obviously, when they travel, they'll also get out on the road. When they go to Duke, they'll go out across North Carolina and see kids and stuff like that. So, and certainly once they head out to California, they're very active out there too. So it's a interesting the way the recruiting calendar has changed has kind of changed the way we cover it, and sort of almost even the interest at this point. It's like, okay, yeah, recruiting is still going on. We got to get back interested in it and get things fired up. And now that home games are coming, things will start moving in that direction again.
You look at the current roster today. You look at who's committed in the 2021 class as well. What needs are filled based on who may be leaving in a year's time on the current roster, and maybe where are a couple of spots that Notre Dame is still going to be actively recruiting?
Yeah, wide receiver and tight end are pretty well addressed. Like I mentioned, they had two tight ends in the class I really like, and a few wide receivers. In addition to Jordan Johnson, they have Xavier Watson, Jay Brunell committed. Defensive back is the spot that I think they could still use help. They do have three guys, Landon Bartleson out of Kentucky, Clarence Lewis out of New Jersey, and I think that they need to add some more. Caleb Alford out of Mississippi as well. So they have three guys. None of those guys are true safeties. They're more cornerbacks. I think some of those guys may end up being safeties, but defensive back recruiting just isn't quite where it needs to be yet, and so I think that needs to be a priority not only in the 2020 class but in the 2021 class. And certainly could be losing a lot of guys going into next season with potentially Alohi Gilman and Jalen Elliott. And obviously, when you talk about Sean Crawford being a starting quarter now and Troy Pride, they could essentially lose their four starting defensive backs going into next season. So they need to make sure that the roster is replenished with defensive backs. And certainly have some young guys on the roster right now that they like, but it's not a long list, certainly. So that's probably the biggest concern moving forward, I think. They have a small offensive line class right now, just two offensive linemen in the 2020 class. But 2021, they have Blake Fisher, a very talented top 100 prospect out of Avon, Indiana, that Notre Dame really likes a lot. I like a lot, too. So Probably need to get more offensive linemen. I don't know if it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be this class, but the 2021 class probably trying to get some big time guys in that class. So those are some of the areas that I think Notre Dame will continue to address moving forward. But they're in a good spot. I mean, they already have a 2021 quarterback committed too, Tyler Buchner out of California, who had a crazy game. I think he had like close to 700 total yards. I think last weekend. So he was hurt his previous year and has come back and has really lit it up so far to start the season.
Well, Tyler, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll hit MLB real quick. I know your team is. It's that. Yes, it's a chuckle. But we'll address that real quick because certainly as football heats up, that means the end of the Major League season is winding down and we're getting into playoff baseball. And we'll also touch a little bit on the NFL. Your take on the Antonio Brown saga.
Oh, goodness.
And everyone's favorite new quarterback, the mustachioed Gardner Minshew. How's that sound?
That's great. That's great.
Well, Tyler and I are live from downtown Elkhart right now at Five Star Dive Bar. When we come back, we'll hit a little bit of MLB, a little NFL, and a couple rapid-fire questions. You're listening to 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Welcome back to Five Star Dive Bar, live from downtown Elkhart. You're listening to the Leprechaun Lunch with Evan Sharpley and Tyler James. So far, we've touched on Notre Dame football playing against Louisville, previewed a little bit of their game against New Mexico. We even talked a little Notre Dame recruiting. We discussed the wing challenge, which we learned that the last break, being about 2.5-3 minutes, is you really have to get down to business if you're going to finish all 2 pounds. And real quickly, we are going to get into a little Major League Baseball, even though Tyler admittedly has checked out now that it is football season. But I went back, and Sean Sires and I did this prior to the Major League Baseball season starting, and put our predictions in for who was going to be the divisional leaders. So just real quick to review, and I'm average.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you doing?
Average right now. In the AL East, I had the Yankees winning. The Central, I had the Indians. In the West, I had the Astros. And then I had the Red Sox and the Angels as my wild card, with the Yankees as the AL.
The Angels are only 19.5 back from the wild card.
But they do have the best player in baseball on their team, so that is their saving grace. In the National League, in the East, I had the Phillies, not looking great. In the Central, I had the Cubs, West, the Dodgers, and then I had the Cardinals and the Rockies as my wild card, with the Cubs as my champions.
Oh.
Yeah. They're not playing great right now.
No, it's funny. I was saying I checked out. I know some Cubs fans, I think, want to check out from this season, too.
They want to check out right now, too. So, yeah. So we still got a little ways to go, at least in some of the races, not necessarily the team side of things. MVP race right now, if you're looking at some of the award indexes, at least on the National League side right now, Christian Yelich is still atop the board as far as being the MVP. Granted, he did just get injured and is going to be missing the rest of the season. What's kind of your take on that?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm curious to see if his MVP case takes a hit, if the Brewers still make the playoffs without him, because obviously they have to make a strong push here down the stretch without him. And certainly it's a small sample size when you compare it on the full season, but they're still playing well. So I think that it's not out of the imagination that they still make the playoffs. And I don't know if that hurts his case or not, but I think it's pretty clear cut that I think he's a fantastic player.
And
they'd be better off with him.
And it looks like, so if it's not him, it'll most likely be the Dodgers' Cody Bellinger, who also had a great year. On the AL side, you might as well just put the ballots in now. Mike Trout's going to run away. This will be his third MVP. I think it's just a battle right now between who's second place, possibly between Alex Bregman and Mookie Betts. So we'll not discuss that one because that one's already in the bag. On the Cy Young side, on the NL, it's looking like kind of a two-way battle. DeGrom and Max Scherzer. DeGrom's come back pretty strong here late, it's possible that he's going to be in the mix for that too. So, and then if you look at the AL side of things, Verlander's really just been lights out here,
right,
to close out the season, and I think it's gonna be number two for him in his career. So, on the cool side right here, and we'll finish with the MLB talk and get back to some football, is how cool is it to have a rookie right now possibly hitting 50 home runs to close out the season in Pete Alonso?
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal that he's been able to put that together. He didn't hurt himself in the home run derby. The home run derby didn't slow him down.
It didn't.
So anytime you could buck that myth is a good thing. So good on him for continuing to hit some homers, and it's been wild to see how many more homers have been hit across Major League Baseball and setting all kinds of records when it comes to that.
Yeah, most in a season again, which I think broke the record.
A couple weeks left,
2017, I believe. And so, of course, that brings up the question of whether or not the balls are juiced. And I think they are.
Yeah, there's some pretty compelling evidence that they are. Yeah, I would say so. Because if the balls aren't juiced, then what are the players?
When was it more fun to watch when one guy was hitting 80 home runs or when everyone was hitting 40?
Yeah, the funny thing to me is, like, when I watch, it'd be like, oh, that's a fly ball. The right fielder's like, well, that's a home run. Like, even the balls that you feel like they're just fighting off to the opposite field are home runs. It's kind of a shocking sometimes when you're watching it. And so to me, it seems like there's got to be something going on with the balls.
We talked a little bit off air before we got to this segment, just the influx of young talent that we're starting to see across the board. Your Chicago White Sox aren't necessarily doing that with some of their prospects.
No.
But if you look at teams really over the entire MLB and more so teams that possibly were in a rebuild, two or three years ago, you're starting to see more of these guys moved up. You look at the Blue Jays. I mean, Bo Bichette coming up and doing the things he's doing, Kevin Biggio, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.,
right.
These guys. It looks like a lot of times now the track to Major League Baseball is shortening for some of the higher prospects versus them being in your farm system for a long time and then bringing them up.
Absolutely. And does it make you feel old when you hear all these sons of MLB players
that we watched
when we were kids? Yeah. I think it's definitely exciting, though. Yeah, it's, like you mentioned with the White Sox, a little disappointing that they didn't bring up guys like Luis Robert at the end of the season here, but obviously probably motivated by keeping years on his contract moving forward. But they've had some young guys play well this year. Tim Anderson's leading the AL in batting average.
He's one of my favorite players.
And, yeah, well, good. I like to hear that. And certainly he had some injuries this year at times that kept him sidelined. But when he's been playing, he's been really, really a lot of fun to watch. Defensively, he's got some room to grow there. But he's been quite the offensive player for the White Sox this season.
Well, let's shift now our focus to the NFL. The big story, of course, over the last several weeks and really – before that, too, has been Antonio Brown, now a Patriot. What are your thoughts on this whole fiasco saga that's been going on now for so long?
Yeah, it was obviously a kind of wacky and almost funny story with everything going on with the Raiders and all that, and him getting kind of forcing his way out, and everyone's like, well, I guess he's going to be on the Patriots now. Everyone's kind of joking about
it was
that.
A joke.
And sure enough, there it actually happens. And then, obviously, since then, the allegations have come out against him from a former trainer of sexual assault and rape, and certainly that takes things in a much different direction. And so it's a much less funny matter, not funny at all anymore. So curious to see what happens. It seems like the Patriots are going to go ahead and play him until they're for sure about what's going on, and just a really bad situation all around moving forward from that. And certainly the Patriots played in their season opener like they didn't necessarily need Antonio Brown, so it'll be interesting to see what they look like when Antonio Brown is out there as well.
Well, the power rankings came out after the first week in the NFL, and the Patriots do sit atop even without Brown there. And from there, it looks like Patriots, Chiefs, Saints, Rams, Eagles, Cowboys, Chargers, Ravens, Vikings, and Packers. Good with that?
Yeah, I mean, disappointed the Bears aren't up there, but they don't deserve to with the way they played their first game. So it's going to be an interesting year in the NFL, I think. A lot of teams are kind of a little bit wide open, and I think a lot of divisions could be pretty competitive, especially I think the NFC North with Vikings, Packers, and Bears all looking pretty tough.
So there's a quarterback that has kind of taken the league by storm here recently, at least from a – the viral sensation with Nick Foles going down the Jacksonville Jaguars. Gardner Minshew is now the starting quarterback. Former Washington State quarterback, had a lot of success there, was a 6th-round draft pick, and now is his they're not necessarily antics. His personality is
an appearance.
Yes, is very eccentric. So you know, right now it's been fun to watch his interviews, and also apparently he has a routine post practice where he does some band work for his shoulder and elbow while he's just wearing a jock strap. Has been the story.
Yeah, well, a lot of wild things. He's Gardner Flint Minshew the second, but he doesn't have. His father's name isn't Gardner Minshew, so they don't really know why the second is there. Apparently, his grandfather wanted to name him Beowulf.
Perfect.
So he's got all kinds of things. He's got the stash going. He looks way older than he is. And then he came out having to fill in for Nick Foles and barely threw any incompletions. So it'll be interesting to see if he can match the on-field success with the off-field craze that he's sort of started so far.
Well, it's a fun time of the year. College football going on right now. The NFL now starting. Pro baseball. There's a lot going on. The sporting side of things. If you're into golf, you've got the Solheim Cup going on right now, too. I don't know if you golf at all, Tyler.
I do not. No, I'm so bad, so okay. I stop.
Well, I appreciate you filling in for Sean Stiers today. It's always great when you're here to hang out. So whenever you'd like to come back, please do that. Before we part ways, I know you touched on it briefly on the total points you thought Notre Dame was going to score. Just real quick, a quick prediction on the score for tomorrow and a couple of keys to the game.
Yeah, 52-13 is what I'm projecting. It seems like you wanted much lower or predicted much lower scoring game. But yeah, the offense needs to play better. Ian Book be more productive, running game establish itself, and the defense continue to look strong like it did for the latter half of that Louisville game.
Well, things will get started tomorrow at 10 a.m. Live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites, and then we'll have the game day show going on as well, and the game, and hopefully it results in a Notre Dame victory. For Evan Sharpley and Tyler James, you're listening to 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.